the more that we involve the teams or individuals in a co-creation design process of what work looks like for them, I bet you the engagement goes up.
This is Leaderful, where we give you the models and the frameworks, the strategies and the skills that you need to drive true transformation for yourself, your team, your organization, and the world. Welcome to the show. Okay, welcome back to another episode of the Leaderful Podcast. My name is Jeff Coulard, and I'm your host today, and I am delighted to let you listen in on a conversation between myself, Rod Miller, and Pablo Romero, the other co-CEO here at the Ally Co. Who's Rod Miller? Rod Miller is a HR evangelist, is one thing he might refer to himself as, an advisor, a connector, a culture catalyst. He's a certified coach, and overall, he's an optimist about work now. What does work now actually need to look like, and how can we improve the employee experience, improve employee engagement, move the needle in a meaningful way on all of the things related to work and life? And it was a true delight to sit down with Rod and spend an hour and then have some lunch with him and Simon, another guest here on the podcast, whose episode will be coming out shortly, and to really dig into what does it mean, this thing we call work, and this balancing act that we're all a part of around how do we make work more meaningful and more connected to each other and to the mission of our organizations. And so I hope you get half as much out of this conversation as I did. And without further ado, here's Rod and Pablo. All right, Rod, Pablo, thank you so much for joining us on the Leaderful Podcast. Thanks for being here.
It's great to be here.
Oh, sorry. I just thought it was assumed that I'm happy to be here, but yes, I'm very happy to be here. We had a big lunch.
We did have a big lunch, and you were concerned that it was going to put you to sleep, and here we are.
Yeah. And here we are.
Yeah.
Here we
are. Awesome. Well, I mean, thank you for carving out the time. It was really, really a pleasure to connect with you on some really important topics today around leadership and work and the state of the world when it comes to those two topics. They're both big topics, and so we're going to do our best to dig into them in a meaningful way. So
there's a lot there. There's a lot there.
So much there. But before we get there to that, I'd love to know about you. What brought you to where you are in the journey? Where are you in the journey? Who is Rod?
Well,
that's a big question, I know, but in a few minutes, what should the people know about you?
It's a great question. Thank you for asking the question. So I've been in a leadership role for probably the last few decades. I'm not going to go too specific because one just looks at the gray hair and goes, he's been there for a while. And I think one of the things I loved about leadership and being a student of leadership was understanding how leadership evolves over time. So I started in the typical role of running a team. That team was local, had a team that was across Canada. And it was very much kind of a directive role as a leader. So back in the day where it was really much command and control. And so I've evolved as I've gone through my leadership journey in a variety of sectors. I've had a chance to work in the pharmaceutical biotech industry. I've worked in the not-for-profit sector recently. Also worked in the academic sector, both as an instructor and as an executive leading out teams that built workforce projects across the globe. So I've had this really kind of common thread within my leadership, which is really about, at the end of the day, developing people and helping people be the best that they possibly can be in the roles that they have. And I think being there for them as they grow in their own journey within their organizations. And so being part of that with so many people in a variety of capacities has really been, for me, what has kept me doing what I'm doing every day. And I love the fact that I get to help people really expand and blossom in their life, and not only personally, but also professionally. And I look at it as a real privilege.
Awesome. What have you learned about leadership? What are some of the principles or pillars of your leadership? I'm picking up vibes of people-centeredness, relationship-based, and that people are the thing that we're there to lead, not necessarily for the outcome or the task or the logistics of the task. But if you had to pick some pillars or principles of leadership that are really important to you.
Yeah. That's such a great question, Jeff. I think for me, what is really critically important is, as a leader, my success in my role, my accountable role to achieve an outcome for an organization or whatever it is very dependent on my ability to lead others into that. So as a leader, it is really my responsibility to create a vision, to identify perhaps even a path for us that we go as a team, and then invite those people to join me on the journey, knowing that that's an opportunity for them to grow and learn in their role. I think the ultimate reward of being a leader is when you see other individuals that you've had a chance to work with or individuals you've had a chance to teach move into a role that they never thought was possible for them, and they're extremely successful at it, and they come back to you and say, I couldn't have done this without you. So to me, the role of a leader is really developing that next leader. Mm-hmm. And I've had the opportunity to do that in a variety of industries and sectors. And for me, that's a pillar is, as a leader, it's not about me. As a leader, it's really about my team. But it's about my team aligned to the outcomes that we need to achieve as an organization or as a team, and getting them to join you on that journey to get to that to get to that outcome.
Mm. I love that. And there's a thing that we talk about here at the Ally Co a lot, which is human-centered, systems-conscious, mm-hmm. and we kind of need both of those. Mm-hmm. And so I'm picking up that from you is that, yes, the human is important. I want to help them grow, help them learn, help them maximize their potential in the context of the system and the mission mm-hmm. that we're on, right? Mm-hmm.
Exactly, 100%, 100%.
Awesome. Pablo, I'm going to keep asking questions and just talking, but you're welcome to like chime in anytime. You're welcome to pipe in and ask questions if I move off something too quickly and you're like, hey, hang on, we got to dig in here. Don't hesitate.
Yeah, no worries. I did want to maybe ask a question around the portion there around developing people. Mm-hmm. Okay. So at some point as you are successful in growing a team, you know, what's been your experience in scaling that?
Mm. Well, there's a couple of things that come to mind for me. Number one is when you empower your people, what you're saying to your people is that I trust that you know what you need to do and that you're going to come to me if there's challenges or obstacles. And my job as leader is to help get those out of the way or help you move through whatever that might look like. Even my job as a coach is to help people kind of move through those moments. So I think that empowerment piece is really critically important. But then on the other side of that piece of empowerment is ensuring that the environment that we're in is a safe environment for them. So being able to make mistakes and not jumping in and fixing the mistake, but being able to for them to make mistakes and then identify what they would do differently out of it, that's the learning moment, right? It's we didn't quite meet the mark on that one. Let's debrief and, you know, redesign and kind of go forward and try something new. So it's kind of an iterative approach in a way, but it's creating that space for that individual or that team to try different and new things. Because I think at the end of the day, if we do that as leaders, we really help breed engagement. We breed team building and trust and all those things that are really important for us in what is today a very dynamic and nimble work environment that we need to be ready to change and be agile. So I think that's a principle. The principle of safety or of patience, I think, is another one. Is, and I'd look at my background as a teacher and an instructor, and being patient in the learning process, and allowing people to gravitate to it at their own pace and support them. You know, people learn at different rates. We all know that. There are people that don't learn as fast or don't want to jump in as fast as others do. So it's creating an environment where you see people for who they are and the challenges that they're facing as they navigate this change, as an example, and being there for them and not being in a position of judgment or being in a position of pushing or, you know, really instilling an environment of safety. And that requires, I think, a lot of patience and clarity.
I got to jump on that one because we're going to dig into some tactics and some of that level. And there's a piece of your journey I still want to explore before we get to tactical on leadership, but how do you maintain that patience, or how do you have that patience when you're a leader, knowing that, so I've been in positions before where I'm trying to protect my team and give them that space to learn and grow. And there's pressure from the systems, whether it's peers and colleagues on the leadership team, whether it's people above me, how have you approached that as a leader in that space of like having that patience in a system that, let's be frank, is often very results driven, very fast moving, you know, doesn't tolerate sometimes the mistakes and the experiments as much as we'd like it to.
Yeah, that's a great question, Jeff. I think my experience, this is an experience of one, is really around putting I would say a boundary in place of or even I would call it a buffer of me versus what is the system, right? So if the system is saying, you know, you need to deliver these results by such and such a time, my challenge is I don't want to go to my team with that same type of energy. I want to go to my team with, here's our opportunity, here's the outcome that we're required to do. I mean, because at the end of the day, we're all accountable to delivering whatever those are in the organizations that we're in. How do we co-create this together and co-design this together that we as a team or as an individual are going to meet this opportunity or this mark or this outcome, whatever it might be? And then being in a position of buffering. And so it's, you know, it's managing up, it's managing across, it's leading down. It's just being in a position where that's all that you carry as a leader. That's all really important. And I think it takes time and it takes patience to kind of build that with the organization. But I think that's where you get the strength of really developing a high performing team. And I've been in a position where I've been so fortunate to work with some incredible people that I've led in so many different industries that I look back and go, okay, I designed the alliance with my leader that I want to create. And then I execute and implement with my team that we want to achieve, whatever those outcomes are. And we do it in a way that's designed for our team. So we take all the individual needs in account and we look at how do we, it's like, to me, it's like a, I'll use the analogy of a football team. That was my sport in high school. And you know, the quarterback plays a role, the tight end plays a role, the tackle plays a role. It's making sure everybody understands the role that they're going to play to achieve the outcome and they're clear how we work better together and then allow that to unfold and then manage upwards with my leadership team saying, here's where we are, here's where we're headed, here's the results that we're achieving. And just being that buffer between myself and the team.
Hmm. Yeah, I love that. And maybe when a little downstream of this moment, we'll talk about the different analogies we can use for the workplace, because I do gravitate more towards the sports team analogy than the family analogy. I think there's problematic things that exist there.
That's so true.
We'll talk about that in a minute. But before we get there, there's a piece of your journey that's really interesting that I'd love to explore. Mm. And that's your journey as a member of the Métis Nation.
Yeah.
And so if we could explore that a little bit and you could fill us in on what that journey has shown you in your life, what it, the learnings that have come out of it, that experience.
I'd love to. So this was something I didn't know for quite a long period of my life. It was a family secret, so to speak, and not one that we were allowed to talk about. And my sister and I were both born of the same mother. And my mother left when I was 11 months old. And I'll say my biological mother left when I was 11 months old. And my sister was two, and she left us at home one day and just kind of walked out. And my dad came home and we were there, and obviously she was gone. And so we had to move through that. And so it was something that was kept secret from me until I was in my teens. And then there was an incident in our family where it came clean, so to speak. And at that point in time, I was told that I wasn't allowed to tell anybody. This was meant to be a secret and no one was to know. And I struggled with that for the longest time. And in fact, I struggled with it so much that I tried to bury it. I tried to just say, that's not who I am. That's not part of me. And there was always this kind of, gnawing at me that I need to move this forward and explore it. And so when I got married, in my first marriage, 3 months before, I received a phone call from an individual who claimed at the time to be my aunt, my biological mother's sister. And she shared with me that my aunt had passed away, or my mom had passed away in 1977 in Vancouver and all this stuff. And it was this massive amount of information that just caused me so much pain and heartache. But it also mobilized me to start thinking about this journey. And so that was a long time ago. And so this has been a journey I've been on and off for a long time. And so how it became to be was when I decided this is actually part of who I am as a person. And I need to explore this a bit more. And so I reached out to the Métis Nation of Alberta and I shared with the case manager the situation. And she said, well, you can certainly apply. And she said, chances are not very good because there's some documentation missing because your mother, you know, use so many different names and it's hard to figure this out. And so I went through the process of applying for citizenship. And I remember going to the mailbox and I saw on the top of the mail was this envelope from the Métis Nation of Alberta. And I'm like, oh, okay, that's the rejection. That's it. Okay, so that's the rejection. And that's kind of where I set myself up. And so I opened up this envelope and I grabbed the envelope and I could feel something in there. I thought, well, why would they have something in there if this was a rejection letter? And so I opened it up and I pulled out the certificate and this pin, and the certificate said, here's your citizenship number. You're now a member or citizen of the Métis Nation. And it was a really important moment for me because what I came to realize is that this part of my life of who I am, this is part of who I am. And so I kind of, at that point in time, embraced it and said, I need to dig into this more. I need to understand this more. And the gift that's given me is that when I talk about it with other people, and I bring this forward, because if you look at me, I look pretty Caucasian. I don't have any of the traits of native blood, although I do have it. I just look kind of Caucasian. And what it did for me and what it's done for me, continues to do for me, is it opens up a space for conversation. And people see through their eyes. And so someone might look at me and say, that would never have occurred to me that that's who you are or part of who you are. And so it opens up the space for conversation to for people to be real. And I think the more authentic we are, the better we all are up because of it. And so I use it as an opportunity to allow people to come into that space and tell me about you. So it's really bred this curiosity that I have, this these conversations that I want to have with people, because I think as human beings, we need to be connected. The pandemic showed us that. We need to be connected. And I use this as a way of saying, hey, listen, I really want to get to know you. Tell me about you and who you are. And to do so, I need to open up the space by telling people about who I am and what's important to me. And it has bred so many wonderful conversations. And then I use it as a leader, because I think one of the most important traits of or competencies or skills of a leader really is that skill of curiosity, of being able to ask authentic questions that are curious about the other person and to invite them in to have a conversation with you. It does so much around building trust and making a safe environment. And so for me, I use that story as a means of sharing with people, this is who I am. I really want to get to know who you are as a person.
I love that. And thank you for sharing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great segue into some conversations that we want to have today about leadership, some of those competencies and skills to do a better job of it, to be frank, right? Mm-hmm. Like I can be a little hard on leadership sometimes. You know, I'm easy on leaders. Leaders are great people, but leadership sometimes it misses the mark. Yep. And we see that in all kinds of ways. We've seen it for a long time. Actually, it's not new information, levels of employee engagement, levels of burnout in our organizations, things that we can tie directly back to the workplace experience. Yep. Pablo, you're nodding your head. You've had your own workplace experiences. I've had my workplace experiences. Rod, no doubt you've had yours, where we can point to leadership and say, if this had been done differently, if power had been operationalized in a different way, in a better way, I wouldn't have had these negative experiences or wouldn't have had these health impacts in my case and Pablo, yours as well, which you've talked to on the podcast before. So that's a long segue question, which is me just getting my head around where are we going next with this podcast. And I guess the question is world of work now.
Yeah.
What does work look like now? We're coming out of a pandemic.
Yeah.
A couple of years of pretty intense change. I think we can all say that the pace of change has accelerated.
Yeah.
Right. And from your perspective, world of work now, what does it look like? Both of you, this is a question for both of you. So Rod, I'll give you a first crack at it unless you want to take a break and
This is great. Yeah. This is such an important topic. And I always kind of reflect back. And if we think about it, you know, about three years ago, I remember watching TV and the pandemic was all over the news. And I remember visually seeing someone carrying this huge monitor and desktop out of their office and they're going to go set themselves up in a remote environment in their homes. And I just thought, wow, how powerful is that? And then I reflect on my own team at the time and that we were working with, as we were working this through, was getting them set up in their homes. And I remember one person saying to me, well, we're only going to be in this for a couple of weeks, and then we're going to be right back at it. So a lot of thoughts about, you know, resistance to change and kind of staying with normalcy. And here we are 3 years later. You know, the pandemic for me, and the experiences I've had through it has really been a catalyst for us to rapidly evolve change in the world of work. And we talk about it. We've talked about future work for a long time. We talk about digital transformation and all those things around that. And we talk about changing work, workplace, and the workforces and all that stuff that's happened out of this. And I think the pandemic served as a catalyst because we were talking about all these things before it happened. And then there was this rapid movement across the globe of people moving into this new environment. And with that came all these challenges of how do we do this? I mean, I think of people who had a young family and had these structures where they went to work and then they came home at the end of the day and they had their family time and then they did that repeatedly and that's how it worked. Now immersed in an environment where their kids are at home, can't go to school, their spouse is at home and working, and all of a sudden all these dynamics have really changed. And the amount of stress that came out of that was extraordinary. We've seen it in the mental health numbers. And I think that's something that we continue to have to not lose sight of is the impacts that this has had on people. But what came out of it, if you look at the overall experience, is we developed new habits in terms of how we work. And we also identified what works for us as individuals. So when we start thinking about, well, when I hear this, I shiver when someone says, well, we've got to go back to work. And I'm like, well, for 3 years, we've actually been working and we've been working effectively. The numbers say that we're productive. There's engagement issues, sure, but we're productive in getting things done. But we really redefined what work was for us as individuals. And I think that's the key learning here is that the contract between an employee and employer, which is pretty generic, right? It actually has become much more individualized. And so we add that to the demographic of what the Gen Z demographic has experienced in this world. We add that to the digital transformation that occurred as we connect now to do work. And we think about things like, do I have to go downtown or go someplace to do this work? Or can I do it at home? And all those factors have now come together to really redefine what work is today. And I term that work now. It is no longer the conversation of future of work. It is, we are in this, immersed in this. This is what it is today. We got to deal with that. And so I think some of the things that we've begun to see really center around the fundamental changes that have occurred in how we look at work itself, but how we also look at the workplace. I mean, here we are, we're in a podcast studio that is now something that was born out of the pandemic, and we're doing this work together. So the workplace itself has also changed. And then you take a look at how people work today and they're saying, you know, I don't want to commute down anymore. I want to make work meaningful for me and I want to make connection meaningful for me. So if we think about going back to what was before, it's actually impossible for us to do that. There's really no way we can. And I know that companies are struggling with this and trying to figure this out. And the simple solution for many has been, well, we'll come back a couple of days a week and all will be satisfied and everything will be great. But there's still this resistance to that. And that's because we've all experienced the pandemic very differently. And so we've come out of this looking for something that's new and different and unique. And so I think organizations today are going to continue to struggle with, well, what does that look like? What does that look like for us to really engage the workforce? And, you know, one of the learnings as I talk to people is, people want to have the flexibility to be able to work when it works for them and where it works for them. And I think that that's hugely valuable. But people also want to have connection. We are a species of connection. Humans connect. We're societal. We are community-based. So having that connection with our fellow workers is really important. So the demand is, hey, listen, I will come down to a workplace, whatever that is, if the experience of that workplace is different than the experience that I have at my remote place, home or whatever it might be. I don't want to come down to a place to sit at a cubicle or at a desk for 8 hours on Teams chats or Zoom meetings or whatever it might be. I want to come down and genuinely connect. So I think when I think about work now, it's also looking at, well, how do we define a workplace that gets people excited to come down and participate and connect as an organization, whether that's a team or a bigger organization, to again come together to achieve the outcomes that we want to achieve as an organization going forward. I think we need to rethink some of those constructs of work that still stand in the way.
For sure. I'm going to pass it over to you here in a second, Pablo, but this reminds me of some memes that were going around in the last year or so where it's like, come back to the office for the culture. And then there's a picture of the culture and it's like a dirty microwave or it's a cubicle, somebody sitting in a blank cubicle, like you said, staring at a Teams chat. Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's right. Like we don't need to be together to experience that.
Yep.
We can, when we are coming together, it better be meaningful,
yep.
Right? It better yep. be connecting. So yep. Pablo, thoughts as well on work now and what we're seeing in the workplace.
Yeah, I mean, to frame it, the pandemic was a lot of things to a lot of people. But if we frame it within the world of work, I agree with Rod. For me, it really just unearthed underlying needs, values, and aspirations that human beings have always had. Mm-hmm. But the design of how work got done is a behavior. If you think about the organization as an entity, it's been doing it this way for decades. And when it had to change behaviors, the people that are actually that make up that organization started to have actual time. Maybe it's the 1 hour commute every day. Now I have time to reflect on what's meaningful to me. I can maybe make that breakfast for my daughter mm-hmm. before she goes to school. Mm-hmm. I can have those few minutes with my wife or on the phone with my friend to connect. Mm-hmm. And I started to realize, wow, like, where's this been mm-hmm. previously? And then I look and I say, I'm still getting work done. In fact, probably more productive because I have more motivation because my needs are being met in these other parts of my life. So for me, I think it was an opportunity for when people thought about work life to reassess what's meaningful to them and to think about it as work life. Like, how can we harmonize those things?
Yeah.
And I think, I don't think it's, I don't know if I think this, but I think most workplaces have good intentions behind some of their decisions. Yes, there may be a lack of trust in people or in teams, but I think I've heard it too. Like, people are saying, I want to reconnect. Actually, I do want to go back to the office. But the way we used to meet and connect, that doesn't actually serve the underlying need, right?
Yeah.
And so I think organizations need to, like, we always say this, what do you know about this from their perspective? Connection, we know people want it. It's how do your people want it, right? What are their needs when it comes to connection? What are the activities that actually drive that for them? There's going to probably be different groups that go about getting that need met. So find out what those are and then design around those, as opposed to saying, well, 3 days a week, come to the office, boom, done.
Well, see, that's the thing, right? So the edict is the simple answer of what you know, which is we're just going to do that. We're going to come back a couple of days a week and you can have Monday and Friday to figure it out. Or the other idea, which you just hit on, is how do we co-create the solution together, whether that's at a team level or an organizational level? Because let's be honest, not every team can do the same thing. So if you're, you know, let's say you're an oil and gas services company and you got a field-based group that, you know, spend their time out in the field or whatever, and they got to come to a place, or that kind of makes sense. You're an accounting group and you got the infrastructure in place and you can work remote. Okay, you got to do what makes sense to you, obviously aligned to what makes sense for what the organization wants to achieve out of this as well too. But that takes work, right? That's not a simple answer. And so we need to get into those conversations and challenge our thinking around what we think of work today. I mean, let's look at this. I mean, it's not an accident that shifts are 8 hours a day, right? That's a productivity thing from decades ago when we were manufacturing and we could get three lines 24/7, right? Maximum output. Well, that's changed a lot. And there's still elements of manufacturing, but we've moved into a knowledge-based economy where the capital sits in the head now. It doesn't sit in the machines. And so how do we really focus on engaging that human capital perspective in a way that works for the team and the individuals? And I think that's the real opportunity we have ahead of us to really design that, but doing it together with the teams. And I think that's where I also, and I don't know if the literature would bear out on this, but I would assume that it would. The more that we involve the teams or individuals in a co-creation design process of what work looks like for them, I bet you the engagement goes up. And I bet you the retention stays up.
I bet a bunch of things.
Right? Productivity goes up. So I think it's there. And we're starting to see the literature say that. I think that's the outcome. Mm-hmm. And so I think you've hit it, Pablo. It is about how do we design this together?
And I want to come back to a point you brought up earlier around patience, right? And I think we could closely, if we did some affinity mapping, we could throw empathy within that, right? And I think that's one of the core skills. We hear it called a soft skill, but it's one of the human skills that we hear is really needed right now by leaders.
Yeah.
And when I think about the reason we're connected with you is because you get this, right? But you've come up through a system that was totally different.
Yep.
Yet you see the opportunity to change it. And I wonder, I was like, oh, is it because he's a teacher that he's had to learn patience and empathy that allows him to be successful, right? And I was reading an article the other day about the top three skills that leaders today need, supposedly. And one of them was collaboration. And we all say, oh, yeah, I know, I've seen that. But it was within collaboration, the leaders that make a difference are the ones that celebrate failures, mistakes, right? So if we're going to invite people in to create these new ways of working and they don't work out right away, you can see what's going to happen. I told you so, right?
Back to the office.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? And so just like, if you're listening, don't do that. The mistakes and the failures will glean insight, innovation, and creativity into other parts of your business, right? And at least then you have the data to say, to make an informed decision.
Yeah. And I think what's so important in that statement that you just said is that is you can't build an environment of growth on failure if you don't have psychological safety. Like, you have to have that. So I think I love the idea of human skills. I call them essential skills of leaders today. And I certainly don't call them soft skills, because they're not. They're so important. But, you know, things like empathy, building trust, those are all really important skills of leaders today that we don't actually train. We don't actually teach people, how do you build an environment of trust? We don't teach people about empathy so that they actually live empathy. So those are the kind of things when I talk to my post-secondary colleagues who are in the teaching space, I'm like, that's leadership stuff. And we got to move into that space to make sure that we're really training the leaders of the future around these really important skills that we call human skills. But resting underneath that is the ability to say and live and breathe, this is a safe place for you to try. So imagine you're in a situation where you have a leader who says, yeah, no, I'm really all about you trying. I'm all about you doing this and giving it a shot. And then, you know, you do something and why the heck did you do that? You get the slap on the hand or whatever. Well, you're not going to probably try that again, right? Like, it's not a safe environment for you to do so. So I think this is really probably one of the most important elements of leadership going forward. And today is how do we build a safe environment for our people?
Well, and I'd love to dig into that and shift gears from, we've painted a bit of a picture of the current world of work now, right? What does it look like? And it's different than it was a couple years ago. And it's been accelerated by some forces like the pandemic. Mm-hmm. What are the implications of that for leadership? And so we've talked about some of these human skills or essential skills around safety and empathy. You know, we would probably argue that power dynamics actually exists underneath of that layer, that things like trust and safety are outcomes of leaders who are able to see power and hold it and use it well, as opposed to unintentionally or accidentally, doesn't really matter. But if the impact is negative, you know, there's that intention impact gap that we talk a lot about. Mm-hmm. So just to frame it up, what needs to shift in a lot of leadership, mainstream leadership or traditional leadership models and ideas, tools, all the things, from your perspective? You know, we've named a few, but what else is there for you?
Yeah. So the way that I would look at it is that we lead from how we were led in an organization, right? So our model of leadership is quite often the leader that has led us in different environments. And I've had the opportunity to work and lead in a variety of organizations and sectors through my career. And I've had some really phenomenal leaders who I aspire to be. They were my coaches. They were my mentors. They were phenomenal to work with. And then I've had leaders who I'm like, oh my gosh, I would never want to adopt that type of behavior. And you know, you work against that as an emerging leader. So I think the implications for leadership are how we have led in the past. We need to do a little self-reflection as leaders to say that isn't necessarily how we need to lead in the future. And that when we look at the human skills that we've talked about, those are core elements of leaders of the future. And I think there's programs certainly that support the development of that. But I think what really supports that is the mentoring of that and ensuring that the leaders that we get to lead, it's a bit different if you're an emerging leader and this is your first step into it. But I think as leaders, as we lead other people, it's really our responsibility to lead them into the future with these new skills being core to how we lead in the future. And like I said earlier, what we're seeing now is that this is resulting in greater engagement of your employees, retention of your employees. I would argue attraction of your new employees, because they want to be part of what's being created, and then obviously the productivity. So I think that the big implications for leadership is really looking at leadership very differently than how we've looked at in the past, and then designing the leadership development of your organization that works for you, with a core focus on these essential human skills that we talk about.
How about for you, Pablo? What do you?
Yeah, I mean, it makes me think about the path to leadership, which, like to your point earlier, is an outcome. You couldn't be in a leadership position or a position of role power, and your outcome or your impact as a leader, your leadership, might not be there.
Yeah.
And so you know, we see this with a lot of leaders now, and the amazing thing about the, you know, the people we're working with is they're saying what got me here isn't going to get me where I need to go next. You know, we've a lot of traditional organizations, you're there because you did a job very well, mm-hmm. and you mm-hmm. performed based on mm-hmm. certain metrics that were valuable to the organization at that point. I think those metrics are still there, but they're indirect. So they're a result of other metrics now, mm-hmm. right? Like we talk about learning and growth, creativity, innovation, right? Adaptive capacity, psychological safety, right? Yep. For us, these are the underlying behaviors and dynamics that we can impact to get even better metrics mm-hmm. for the team. Mm-hmm. And so I think leaders, if they can be aware of the path I took to get here, maybe isn't the path now that we need as a society, as an organization, and to say like, I don't have to have the answers because I don't. And so I'm going to bring in people that are, you know, smarter than me in one area. Or like, I think that's scary for some leaders to step away from what got them to where they're at. Right. And because we hear some of these leaders now that have been promoted even higher up to say like, we hear this word imposter syndrome, yeah. or I don't know what to do next. Yeah. And so they make decisions based out of fear of, I need to know this stuff. I need to be the one to do this work. And I think that's changing.
Yeah, I agree. And I remember a couple things come to mind. I remember when the pandemic started and I was working with my team, and one of my leaders came to me and said, you know, literally these words, what are we going to do? And my answer as a leader was, gosh, I really don't know, because I don't know what this is going to look like. But what I can tell you and share with you is that whatever we do, we're going to do this together. Like, we're going to figure this out together. And so it became an experience of the team for us to navigate how we led our organization through the pandemic. And it was a great experience. You know, we talk a lot about vulnerability being, you know, really important. And I think we need to understand what that vulnerability really means. But I think what's really important for leaders of today is to be able to be in the space of saying, I really don't know this and I need some help. So whether it's you have a coach or you have a peer or whatever it might be, someone you can talk to, because the loneliest job in an organization is to be a CEO, because you have no one in the organization that you can talk to about the struggles that you're facing every day. So you got to think about a peer group or colleagues or whatever that you can bounce ideas off of. But I think that vulnerability piece is really important for leaders to be able to step into the space of being open to, I don't really know the answer to this. I need some help. But leadership, the example of leadership to me, it starts really at the top of an organization. And it's really, you know, it's the top leader, whether that be a team leader of an organization, of a team, or it be the CEO, is how you lead is how that organization is going to lead. So if you're a CEO and you're embracing these new emerging human skills of leadership, what you're saying to your organization is that this is really important for us. If you're a leader that's embracing this as a team leader, what you're saying to your team is that this is really important. So you're giving your team the opportunity to kind of step into that space and being able to emulate what they see in their leadership. And I think when we look at the future of organizations, it really comes down to leaders being in that space of being vulnerable, being human. I struggle like you do. I'm trying to figure this out like you are. Let's do it together. Let's, you know, design this for our team. So I think that those are really important considerations for us as we think about developing leaders of the future. And it's often emulated by those who lead us.
Yeah, I think that piece there is leader as participant in the learning and growth, as opposed to, you know, we've actually stopped saying that you can't hire us to come in and fix your team. Like that's not a thing we do, but yeah. that's a lot of leaders looking for the silver bullet or the fix for a problem. And they've already decided what the problem is. It's not them. It's something else. Yeah. And come and help me fix it. So that humility, that vulnerability, there's something there to recognize that. And that was probably an unlock for me as a leader. It's like, I actually don't know. Like, I need to ask some help, right? Because the pressure of trying to know it all and trying to have all the answers, you can see it. I felt it in my own leadership practice. Yeah. I feel it as a parent. Heck, having to have the answers for my kids or, you know, what's next, that vulnerability of not knowing, I think is one of those skills. When you talk about those essential skills, that mm-hmm. humility and that mm-hmm. vulnerability.
Yeah, I agree.
For sure. Let's let's get a little bit more tactical. Let's dig down into some of these pieces. We've mentioned some things, but I would love to know your go-to practices, your go-to frameworks, your pathways to help leaders. So you're a coach and and as well as a leader in various sectors. From your experience, like, what are some of those practical things that you do to stay curious, to stay humble, to be vulnerable, to, you know, step into that unknown a little bit with your team? Do you have some examples or some?
Yeah, sure. So for me, I mean, it has been a practice. It's been a long time as I've worked it through. As I mentioned, I've been a leader for a number of decades. And so I came from that directive leadership space of command and control,
have the answers,
right? To have all the answers and tell the team what to do and all that stuff. To now I'm much more of a, I would say, an empathetic leader, where when I work with my own teams, it's about empathy and vulnerability, humility, and all those things. So I think, you know, there's a framework that I follow, and it's from fear to care. And the fear stands for, you know, frustration. The E is emaciated. You know, there's not enough resources to do what I want to do. I feel withered and withdrawn. The A is I feel agitated. I just don't feel like I'm part of something. And the R is resign, right? So if I'm not getting what I need from the organization as a leader, I'm in a fear-based environment. And so what I like to do is to move people from that fear-based environment to really a compassionate-based environment, or a care environment, I call it. So, you know, compassion and competency and caring is C's. And the A really is about acceptance and agility. How do I become an agile leader that allows me to navigate change? Because when we think of today, it is what the pandemic has shown us. We will always be in an environment of disruption. We will always be in an environment of change. There will always be something that is going to challenge us as a leader. So how do we build ourselves, you know, in that environment of agility? And then with that also is the R on care is resiliency. Is how do we develop an environment of resiliency and respect? Where we said it earlier, and I think it's an important thing to think about, is as a leader, how do we build community as leaders within our organization? There are people in your company or your organization that know things that you don't, or that have experienced things that you haven't. So how do we tap into that when we're thinking about, you know, building out our team? And then the E really is about encouragement and empathy. How do we build an environment where we encourage our people, we're empathetic with our people, not sympathetic, but we're empathetic with our people to help them, to show them that we understand? How do we step into that space? So I love the idea of, let's move from what is really a fear-based environment into a care environment across an organization. And the principles that can be done at a team level, an organizational level. And I think that for me is a framework that I use when I'm having conversations with people and with leaders who are thinking about moving from, well, I'm here now. How do I get to here? And we'll get you there. I think we all have the ability to jump into these challenges. We all have the ability to create solutions with these challenges. Sometimes we need a peer, sometimes we need a coach, sometimes we need a mentor to help us kind of identify that. So I'm also a big believer in connecting with your broader based community. And then looking, I think I told you this over lunch, I'm reading a new book called The Leader is Healer. And I'm just fascinated by this book, because a few years ago when I was president and CEO for CPHR Alberta, I was in a panel conversation with one of our speakers. We were talking about well-being and wellness. It was just at the start of the pandemic as we were navigating all this. It was a weird situation, because I used to stand in front of a crowd and, you know, all the members out there in the audience. And now I'm standing in front of a TV camera broadcasting to the internet. So it was kind of weird. And I was having a conversation with her, and this statement came to mind to me, which was, in order to lead well, we must be well. So as leaders, we need to put ourselves first if we're going to give the best to our teams and to our organizations. So those self-care practices that we have are really, really important. And I do a lot. I'm a runner. I do yoga every day. I meditate. I read. I feed myself first, knowing that in order for me to give the best to my team or to my clients or whoever it might be, I've got to make sure I take care of myself. And so those are really, really important. And so I want to make sure that when I'm working with other leaders, that they do that too, is that they put themselves first. And so identifying with them, what are the most important practices in your life that feed you and help you move through challenges and stress? the last thing we want is to pent up stress, because that doesn't help. It's not a great place to be. We know that there's illness related to that. So helping leaders understand stress and triggers and being able to move through that with the intention of giving themselves the best of themselves, but also giving their teams the best of themselves.
Yeah, I love that. And we often say that self-care is not optional, it's ethical.
100%.
So when you think about power, and we think a lot about power around here and how it shows up, but we're most at risk of misusing whatever power we do have in a system, whether it's formal leadership power or less formal. We're more likely to misuse it when we're not well ourselves, because we're going to center our need for wellness, or our stress is going to leak out in unhealthy and unhelpful ways. And I think that, you know, again, to ground this in practice, it's, you know, some of it is that yoga or that running or the meditation or the journaling. And some of it, you know, we talk a lot about boundaries.
Setting
boundaries as you know, probably the underpinnings of self-care is being able to establish those psychological, relational, whatever boundaries you need to protect the power that you do have and the space that you do have, I think is an, you know, self-care. You know, I put some air quotes, people can't see me and we're obviously on audio, but self-care gets a bit of a bad rap sometimes, or a little bit of a surface level piece where it's like, actually, like, what's the purpose of self-care? It's so that we have the energy and the power that we need to make the impact we want to have in the world.
100%. 100%. And I was going to talk about boundaries too, because I think as a leader, the one thing that we can do is that we can live our boundaries. So we need to identify what those boundaries are, but we can then live those boundaries as examples for our team to follow. So if I end up saying that my boundary is that I don't work on the weekend, yet you get an email from me on Sunday night, I'm sending the wrong message to you.
How often does that happen? That incongruency between what we say we value and our behavior.
Totally. Yeah. And our team and I remember once it wasn't long ago, I had a team member say to me, "Yeah, Rod, I know this is important to you, but here's what happens to me if you do that. If you do that, you're telling me that my boundaries now are not important because your boundaries are not important to you." And I thought, you know, that's really, really powerful. So I think, and that means that person felt they were in a safe environment, that they could actually come and share that with me. But I thought, yes, sometimes that the really important thing for a leader of today is that self-reflection. What impact am I having on my team with the behaviors that I'm doing today? And then what are the opportunities for me to change so that I can have a more positive impact on my team in the future? And I think those are the kind of things we need to instill in our leaders for the future.
I'm going to take us off script here for a second.
Okay. Oh, we didn't have a script. Where's the script?
No, there is no script.
I got a story after I want to come back
there
to
it. There are some topic areas, but the other piece, so self-care is ethical. You can't lead well unless you are well. Yeah. Those are really important pieces. The other piece, like an essential skill set, is the ability to receive and give effective feedback. And it sounds like you, in that moment, that person who reported to you, you know, their safety was there to be like, "Hey, Rod, how is this? Went with that value?" And you're like, "Yeah, you're right. It wasn't." Not a lot of leaders actually have healthy feedback mechanisms in their organization. And so the question here is a piece of feedback that stuck with you for a long time. It could be a positive or constructive piece of feedback, but something that really had an impact for you when you were in a leadership role. And you're like, "Oh yeah, that was a turning point for me, this moment of feedback."
Gosh, that's a good question. I might have to throw it to Pablo as I
was sure.
I'll some of those.
I could share my story because it's a recent one while you think of
sure.
That.
Sounds good.
So I'm just, how much do I divulge here? this is a generic story. So I know of a leader. I know him pretty quite well. And they recently lost a really great person on their team. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten data or feedback from people around him, and I've also got his version of the story. And so let me paint the picture. Someone leaves and they find out why at the exit interview, like most organizations. And the reason is I love the leader. I care about them. They care about me. I've got to do a lot of work here, but I watch what they do and I can't do that. And if that's the behavior I need to do to get there, I'm out. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And when I talk to the leader, you know, this is the intention versus impact gap. I want to show them I'm working just as hard, if not harder. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That you know, that I'm putting it in here for them. And so the intention is to show I'm here with you, but the impact of that behavior is that this is what you need to do to be successful here. And you lose some great people when in reality that he didn't expect that of that individual. Right. But they never had this conversation. So it makes me, you know, back to your point, Jeff, someone felt safe enough to come and maybe challenge something that you had done and give you feedback on it. And I think that's what's missing is we hear this so much. I have an open door policy. And most of the time they're great people. Like, you know, I look at some of my friends, I'm like, you're the best friend, loving, caring it as a boss. You're so different, right? Like you're not, you know, and so what, I think this is what Jeff was getting at. What have you done to create that space that people can come and challenge you on your own things? And then I won't forget his second question was, what's the most, would you call it pinchy or?
Impactful feedback.
Yeah. So I might need to poke for me just to kind of remember the second word of this, but let me address your question first, Jeff, that you had mentioned. And I took over a large organization in a larger organization a number of years ago, and I had this wonderful EA. So when you think about the relationship, and it's a power relationship between, you know, an executive and an EA, and I was doing some things that wasn't sitting well with her. One of them was I wasn't giving her enough time, and I was, you know, building a team and very busy and managing some big stuff. And so she came into my office and she said, I'm really frustrated by you because you're not giving me the time that I need. And so I could have taken this down a couple directions. I could have said, well, that's too bad. Go out and do your job, which I didn't do. I said, okay, let's sit down and talk about it. What am I doing that's causing you frustration? Because that's the last thing I want to do. I want us to figure out how to work together. And so she shared with me that she said, sometimes I feel when I come and sit with you to talk about what we're going to work on, I feel like I'm being rushed and I'm not being seen. And I said, wow, that is not my intention at all to do that. But that is the impact that I was having on that person. And so through the conversation, I mean, it was wonderful. And we just opened up the space to just kind of let this all come out. And it was very respectful. And I could say it was challenging for me to hear this. There's no question. I'm hearing this. And so my takeaway on it was, okay, what can I do for you that helps you feel seen in the conversations that we have? Well, here's what we can do. We can make sure that you're not so rushed. We can make sure that you have set aside time for me to do this, formal, informal time. Similar open door policy, but sure, come on in, but I got 2 minutes kind of thing. So I'm not going to see you. I'm just going to, you know, kind of rush you out. And so we designed an alliance of how we're going to work together. And that was very powerful for me because then I knew there was an expectation and an accountability to how we're going to work together. And it became one of the most productive relationships that I had. And I love the example because it wasn't a peer. It was someone who was, you know, junior to me and power, right? And it was a power dynamic. And so I had to really kind of disperse that power differently in the relationship. So for me, that would, if I was to give you an example, Jeff, that would be the example that I would give where I got the feedback that I need to get. Now, Pablo, what was the other?
Yeah. So Mike, I mean, let's use this example. With this individual, they, you know, I have an assumption here that they didn't wait until they could have quit, right? Waited till that point, wherever that point was going to be, right? Yep. But they chose to come and approach you. Now, sure, maybe there's an individual role power, or sorry, personality power at play. But from the sense I get from you is you have been creating space for this. There's behaviors, there's whether it's what you communicate, how you behave, that have allowed people on your team to feel safe to challenge you on those things and give you feedback. What do you think are some of those things that you do?
Well, so there's a couple things. One is certainly the behaviors that I would have is I'm putting away what I'm currently doing, right? It's as even as simple as turning towards the person and making eye contact, right? So it's not, oh, okay, I hear you and I'm on my phone or I'm typing on my computer.
By the way, we see that so much.
Oh, I'm having flashbacks to a leader I worked with several years ago who could not put her phone down. And it had a tremendous impact. unintentional for sure. But
yeah. My wife and I have this kind of saying, it's a take on intimacy. It's into me, you see. So when I sit with someone in that moment, especially when it's a challenge or it's a conflict or whatever, it is about at that moment in time, I want you to feel like you're the only person that matters. Nothing else matters. No phone, no email. I'll turn towards you. We'll have a conversation. We're going to work it through. I want you to feel like you're seen. And so that's a behavior that I would certainly do. Leadership can be tough. And at times it can be emotional. To your point, Jeff, earlier in the conversation, we have pressures that come down on us and we need to manage that and the stress around that. So in those moments of conflict, it's also holding emotions in check. Not that you're not going to be non-emotional, right? But you're going to just make sure that the right emotions are being used genuinely. And I never condone anger or anything like that. But I just think it's important to say, okay, how am I feeling right now? What do I need to move through in this moment? And is kind of an immediate impact. What do I need to move through right now in this moment as a leader to kind of let go of? Maybe I need to let go of judgment. Maybe I need to let go of this person challenging me. They're pretty hot under the collar. I know what happens if I get hot under the collar. We're not going to achieve anything together. So I'm going to let that just kind of flow through me. So I think it really is centered around that self-reflection of your role in the dynamic and in the relationship and being able to put aside those things that could cause some challenges as you're navigating some of these conversations.
Yeah, you've got maybe you've got a mechanism for doing this, or some people do breathing to get grounded. You were talking about fear, care. We've got at risk, at stake. It sounds like you're able to ground yourself at what's at stake here, and how do I need to show up to get the best outcome here with this individual or this team?
Yeah.
And so is that something that you, is it coming more natural to you? Is it something that you consistently have to, like, you've got to, okay, this is this, boom, ground myself?
Yeah, so 100%. Would I say it comes natural? No, it's work. And it's a lot of self-work. It's self-work through my own coach. It's self-work through, my wife and I, we both kind of share the same background in terms of what we do for organizations. So it's having those talk-throughs with her and tapping into her wisdom and her experiences. And so it is a journey. I mean, I think I look at it and go, there is no, to your point, Jeff, earlier, there's no silver bullet that comes in and kind of fixes us all. But I think the core here is, for me, leadership really is, it's a journey of self-discovery, right? Of who you are as a human and how you lead as a human in an environment that is very dynamic and always changing. So to me, it's like, I always learn something new about leadership every single day in my own work, but also in what I read or whatever. And I just think it, be prepared. If you're going to be a leader, be prepared to be on a journey, because there's not an endpoint. It is consistently changing, because the environment that you're in is consistently changing. And at the root of it is knowing yourself as a person first, and knowing yourself as a leader second, because it comes down to the core of who you are as a human.
Love that.
Awesome. That feels like a little bit of a mic drop moment.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, that's great. Well,
yeah. We've heard visions talked about that way, right? A vision isn't a destination, it's a journey. But what I love about that is leadership is a journey. It's you might get a title, and that might have been your goal to get there. But does that mean you stop being a leader at that point?
Well, I think the core of that, it's a great point, Pablo. I think at the core of that is really, I mean, whether you're a leader or not, at the end of the day, it's really about, how am I developing myself? What am I doing to invest in myself? As my roles change or as the environment changes, and constantly being aware of what are the opportunities to do things, to learn things that make you a better leader.
Yeah, no, and I love that. And I think that moment-to-moment awareness and presence and consciousness, really, of both power but also responsibility, right? So when you talk about that leader, it doesn't help if I get hot under the collar too. Like, nothing good happens if we're both, your role as a leader in that is to be conscious of that environment and the conditions that you're creating for that exchange or for that communication or whatever it happens to be. And so I think that in a world. I know for myself, I struggle with that, that being actually present in the moment. There's so mm-hmm. many demands on our attention, whether those are internal demands of just the to-do list and the stressors and all the things, right? Mortgage payments to knows what, to the demands of the environment that we're in. And you talked about having to buffer your team before, but do we buffer ourselves from that stress or are we reactive and coming from that place, that fear versus care? Again, it's really easy to accidentally find yourself on the fear side of the spectrum and acting in the moment to keep yourself safe or to address that.
Yeah. And we can really get stuck in that fear place. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think if we look at the experience of the last couple of years of, it is really easy just to kind of stay there, right? Cause it's just, it's around you. So I think helping people move from fear to care is really, really important. I think the other thing that I would share that when we look back on kind of the practices and the implications, and you raised this, Jeff, was understanding the systems at work within an organization. So knowing that an organization is structured a certain way, and it's often structured from an organizational design perspective by hierarchy, but as a leader, And I wouldn't say this is a political thing. It's understanding how those systems interplay in the organization. Then how do you as a leader engage in those systems to achieve the outcomes that you want to achieve? And it really means taking a systems thinking approach to the dynamics of an organizational environment.
Yeah, so much here. There's a round two conversation around organizational and team design and leadership development, because I think we're getting in our work to a place where those things are so tightly interconnected that if we're really wanting to move the needle on the employee experience in this new world of work, that we're going to tackle both of those things.
Yeah.
It's one thing to try and like rehabilitate leadership inside of a command and control hierarchical structure. It's another thing to actually take a look at our organizations and our teams and say, are these actually structured the way that is effective? Do they distribute power enough to alleviate some of these symptoms and challenges that we're facing? There's a big conversation, I think, that could be had.
Yeah, sure. No, I agree. And I kind of look at it and I think there's this tension that exists right now as we're navigating out of the experience of the pandemic is, you know, what does that organization of the future? There's a pull, you know, to the future, but there's also kind of a pull to what was normal for people before or what we used to do. And I think the opportunity for us right now is to take a look at what's possible. What can we design for organizations today that allow us to build teams, people, and organizations that are agile, that can adapt to change quickly, that are excited about the opportunities, that are engaged in the future? I mean, that's to me where we need to go as we think about the traditional themes of organizational design and hierarchy. We need to kind of blow that up. I think it no longer necessarily serves an organization. And I've talked about this with other organizations around the constraints, even as simple as a job description, right? So here's your job description. Well, that meets a certain kind of competency framework that you want for the role. But what about the other skills that individual brings to the organization that can be captured and leveraged? And how do you unleash those skills within the organization? And I think we need to think differently about how we structure some of the things that we have in work. These constructs of work that we have need to be relooked at and in some cases actually blown up and redesigned.
Definitely a round two conversation.
Well, yeah. I'm in.
We'll have you back. Any go-to books, resources, authors, podcasts, anything that someone listening can jot down quick and go find things that have been influential?
Well, I certainly think that... I would, and I'm in this right now, as Leader as Healer, I think is a great book. And so I would leave that with people today. Definitely your podcast is awesome. I love the work that you both do around power in organizations. And I would definitely say, you know, link into those podcasts. At the Table by, I think it's At the Table by Patrick Lencioni, I think is another good one for understanding and learning. And I'll have to think about other books and I can send them to you. I, off the top of my head, I don't have any.
No, that's perfect. That's a great list. And we'll throw them into the show notes and awesome. On LinkedIn and people can find them there. So Rod, thank you so much. It was a pleasure and lots to discuss and lots of food for thought for both Pablo and I and our listeners. So
awesome. It was great. Thanks for letting me be here today. It's great.
That was great seeing you and hanging out with you and getting to know more about your story. I learned so much more.
Awesome.
Leaderful is brought to you by The Ally Co., a team of human-centered, systems-conscious consultants, coaches, and facilitators dedicated to helping you and your team tackle the core problems of burnout and stuckness and misalignment and misuses of power and all of the things that get in the way of creating truly human-centered workplaces where everyone thrives and does their best work. Head over to www.theallyco.world to learn more.